You're listening to ThoughtCast. I'm Jenny Atiyah, and I'm speaking with Henry Becton, the president of WGBH. Henry, you just kicked off the Integrated Media Association Conference of 2007, and in your opening remarks, you mentioned that the audience for public radio is flat, for television, it's declining. And my question is a bit of an odd one. Why is this a problem? What's wrong with the old days when public broadcasting had a smaller audience?
Well, actually, I don't think anything's wrong with that. I mean, we don't necessarily measure our success by the size of the audience. I think we measure our success by the impact on the audience. And in fact, some of our most successful programs tend to have small audiences. Let's take This American Life on radio, or some of the pledge programs on public television often have the smaller audience programs are the ones that get the most passionate response. So no, I don't think it's necessarily a problem. However, we do, you know, media is, at least broadcast media, is still an expensive medium. We do want to use our resources wisely, and we need to reach a certain critical mass of people. I'm one who believes that we need to be re-aggregating our audience on multiple platforms. And so I would just finish my answer by saying the broadcast audience isn't the only thing that's important to us at all anymore.
There is, though, this issue that's concerning public radio and TV of a shrinking audience. And I just read in the news that commercial radio has a shrinking audience as well, which is kind of interesting. But my question is, if fewer people tune in to public broadcasting, is that necessarily the fault of public broadcasting, or could it be the fault of the people?
Oh, I think it's, I wouldn't use the word fault, but I think it is part of the general phenomena of the way people are changing their use of media. And they're spending much more time online, and they have many more sources of video and audio programming. And therefore, the audience is just inevitably being carved up into smaller and smaller pieces. So it's part of a tsunami of change in the way people use media.
You mentioned in your talk that one of public broadcasting's assets is its, quote, high-quality informational and educational content rarely found in commercial media, end quote. Is this possibly part of the reason for your declining audience? I dare to bring up the dreaded elitist word, but is this part of the problem?
Oh, I don't think so at all. I think that people have a thirst for high-quality content. And, you know, our experience is that people from all walks of life, all levels of society, are big users of public media. There is this myth that's still out there that you either have to be affluent or well-educated to enjoy public media, and that just isn't true if you look at the audience statistics.
How do you define public media?
Oh, very good question. Because that definition certainly has broadened recently. It used to be public radio, public television, and the websites associated with them. But there are other not-for-profit public interest media providers these days who need to be included in that definition. So I think there are a lot of there's a lot of web-based media now, particularly, that would be included in the term public media.
What about citizen media? Is that public media?
Oh, I think some of it certainly is. And there's been a lot of very interesting blog material on the web that I would put in the category of public media. It's usually in the category of commenting on other media, however. You know, so there has to be some, I'll use the term professional, but that isn't really what I mean. Maybe there's a better term. I'll use the term...
How about the term paid?
There has to be some traditional media that involves, you know, reporters out on the street doing research, documentary makers looking for original content in archives, et cetera, on which other media can comment. And that, I think, is certainly the role of the traditional public media.
What about here at WGBH? I know that you are an innovator in this opening up to a wider definition of what public media is. And full disclosure here, WGBH has broadcast several ThoughtCast episodes, I'm very happy to say, and also co-links synergistically between my site and the Forum Network on occasion. Morning Stories is similarly reaching out to a broader notion of who is allowed on your air, so to speak.
Well, actually, I began my career, producing a public access nightly series on broadcast television, where we tried to eliminate as many barriers as possible to people using the tools of television. So this sort of brings me back to my early days of my career. And you're right, we are engaged in a number of ways in trying to curate and republish material from our audience. Morning Stories is a good example. There's a community of people who contribute to Morning Stories and a community of listeners. For example, we got an email just recently from a man who was stuck out on an ice shelf in Greenland in a raging storm for a week, and he said he was saved mentally by being able to listen to Morning Stories. So, you know, in a way, one can think of part of the job of public media in the future as helping convene communities of interest around content areas. I mean, right now, for example, we're working on a NOVA program, an upcoming NOVA program called The Car of the Future. And our web producer, Lauren Aguirre, decided that she would bring the audience into the production process. And so the website has on it draft scripts, profiles of some of the people we intend to interview, and it asks the audience for their feedback and input into the program. For example, we asked them, where is the car of the future being produced? And the answer we got back was, the car of the future is in our garage right now, which led us to realize there are lots of people out there who have made cars of the future that they want us to showcase, and we're adding a new feature to the website, at least. Whether we'll do it in the program or not, I don't know.
Henry Becton, in your talk, you actually mentioned that web-based interactive experiences really are the future of broadcast media. In particular, you mentioned television. And I'm quoting from your talk, not too long ago we noticed that of the top 20 websites in traffic on PBS.org, five were for content that hadn't been broadcast for years, meaning that you can create a watering hole for your audience. They can come back again and again if the content is appealing enough and can withstand the stretch of time.
Yes, if you Google the word evolution, you get 211 million search results, and the number one of all of that was the series on evolution that our science unit produced in 2001. So we're thinking these days about our role as not just creating broadcast programming and broadcast events, but actually curating a whole library of these content websites where people are still, in fact, the traffic grows each year for these content websites. There are still people posting things on the website that Frontline did in the late 90s on Waco, which, you know, is astonishing. So,
are those posts curated? Is somebody watching to make sure that they're acceptable to post?
Frontline does curate the comments to its website. Because Frontline at its core is a journalism site. But I don't think that has to be true for everything that public media curates. I think we have a high level of trust among our audience. So we need to let them know what it is they're visiting as a site. And for things that they would expect us to curate carefully, like children's programming or traditional journalism, we should be doing that. But I don't think everything has to be carefully curated.
Earlier, I asked you about what is the meaning of public media. What do you see as the definition of public broadcasting, its mission, its purpose?
I think its mission has always been a combination of things that are all around providing people with information and education tools and access to culture, things that they might not even think they were interested in. And that, you know, that mission serves us very well, and I think by and large, is one that translates into interactive media. The difference is that, as things like Wikipedia have taught us, that you can, in fact, collect that information in a way that the audience participates in and helps you out with in interactive media, which is not so easy in broadcasting.
So you're reflecting on the technological change, which has in effect changed the relationship that you have with your audience. Do you think the definition of public broadcasting has changed then from the old days?
I think fundamentally we always, at least certainly at WGBH, we always had as part of our mission to democratize media in a number of ways, to broaden the access to media tools by artists, by people from different walks of life, to diversify the voices that one heard in media, to provide access to those with barriers. We've had a big activity at WGBH around captioning and descriptive video for people with physical impairments. And so in some ways, I think this is still part of the DNA, the original DNA of public media.
To go back to your quote, public broadcasting is high quality informational and educational content rarely found in commercial media. There are an awful lot of Americans who like commercial media. Why is it so difficult to convince them to not be so afraid of the words informational and educational? Why is entertainment king for them? How do we get through to those people?
Well, they are the outcome of their business model. And by and large, historically, the business model in commercial media has been to deliver the largest number of eyeballs to advertisers. There are exceptions to that. C-SPAN is an exception to that, but that's really more like a nonprofit run by the cable industry. Home box office is an exception to that because they don't care how many people watch. What they care, and in some ways they're more like public television, what they care about is that in any given month or quarter, they'll get you something that you cared a lot about and was very high quality. And then you'll remember that when it comes time to renew your subscription. So I've always often thought of public television anyway and public radio as pay media by the honor system. So in some ways, there are in commercial media exceptions, but it all comes down to what the business model is. And our business model is by and large based on a membership, on congressional support, and on philanthropic support that is motivated by the same mission that we are motivated by, of public service.
Last question, Henry Becton. As I mentioned earlier, you were the introductory speaker at the Integrated Media Association conference. The concept of integrated media is an interesting one. How far along do you think GBH is in this integration?
Oh, I think we're at the early stages of integration. I think we're doing pretty well in putting our content on multiple platforms. But I think most media is actually pretty early on in being able to actively combine audio, video, text, maybe interactive gaming elements, things like that. And we do some of that. We have certain websites where we've experimented with that. We did that with a series we did a number of years ago called Commanding Heights, which was about the world economy. We've done it with some of our children's programming, but I would say we're only a little bit way along that journey.
Henry Becton, thank you so much for the interview.
You're welcome. Thank you.